ever done an interview show here at Pro Wrestling Ponderings, but we are back to do one, and my name is Jerome Cuson, and I've got a very special guest on the line. This Friday night, he will be defending the AEW Tag Team titles along with Matt Fitchett in a return match from a recent AEW show. They will be taking on the Hooligans. He is also a former AAW Heritage Champion and AIW Intense Champion. Davey Vega, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Very much so. So I want to start off by talking about this card on Friday. It's pretty loaded. It's crazy to think of just how many, you know, notable stars are on this show. You've got guys from Lucha Underground. You've got Ring of Honor stars. You've got former Ring of Honor stars. And you've got three participants from the Cruiserweight Classic. I'm sorry, four, including Cedric Alexander. What are your thoughts on just being a part of a card that is this loaded and has so many people on it?
You know, it's funny that you mention that because I actually had a conversation with the Hooligans and Fitchett recently at that last show. We were looking at the card and we were kind of looking around us, and we looked around at everybody that was in the locker room. We're going, hey, we're kind of the only guys that aren't really like under contract or like have like national name value. I guess we have some name value, but we were literally like, I guess you could consider us like the local talent at that point. So we thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, man, it's crazy to think, like, looking at these cards, like so much international and national talent, people that have been on TV. And like you said, there's a couple of guys, that are going to be on the WWE Cruiserweight, show coming up. So it's really cool and really surreal for us.
Now, obviously you and Fitchett are the tag team champions, and what does that do? How does that motivate you? Because obviously when you look at the rest of the card, you basically you're gonna have to follow one of these incredible matches. How do you approach mentally to do that?
You know, so even when you know, we didn't have the titles, or you know, just when we first started tagging up, or even when I was in singles competition, you know, my number one priority is to go out there and have a good match that lives up to my own standards, not just like the fans or the people in the back that book me. Like, I have my own standards when it comes to going out there and having a good match. And I'm way harder on myself than other people are, which I think is true for a lot of people. But now that we have the tag titles, and even when I had the Heritage Championship, you know, for the month that I had it, like, I was like, okay, I got to go out there and I got to kill it, because I don't want to give them a reason to, you know, not use me on these cards, or, you know, maybe drop me down further in the card. Like, I really like where I'm at on the card, so.
Certainly, and obviously, it's you and Fitchett, and it seems like a few years ago, you guys were well on your way to sort of making yourselves as a tag team, as the Sex Bombs, and, you know, you were even booked to wrestle the Briscoes on an AIW show, but then injuries obviously took Fitchett out, and you've sort of been on your own, and, you know, Fitchett, it seems like he has finally been able to come back and on a regular basis. So what's the experience been like just being able to team up with Fitchett again and hold these tag team titles?
Yeah, it's, you know, I started off as a tag team wrestler when I first started in wrestling. It wasn't with Fitchett, but I was a tag team wrestler before he even came along. And then I got that guy ended up quitting, like, suddenly. And then I got thrust into a singles role, which I was kind of uncomfortable with. And then Fitchett came around, you know, a couple years later, and then him and I meshed really well in the ring, and we decided to do a tag team thing. You know, we were doing pretty well for ourselves at AIW and a couple of different other places, and we were going to wrestle the Briscoes, and he ended up tearing his quad muscle. It wasn't as bad as like your Triple H when he did his, but it was severe enough to where he had to take a significant amount of time off, just to make sure that he didn't tear it or do any further damage to any other muscles around it. But now that he's back and we're pretty much in the thick of things. I mean, we're Metro Pro Tag Team Champions and we're AAW Tag Team Champions. Like that's, I think we're right there. Like I think we got a couple more things that we want to do just, before, we can get considered maybe one of the top in the, top tag teams in the USA. I think that's still a little bit of ways off, but I feel good about it. Like Fitch is my guy. Like he's my dude. I enjoy tagging with him and I think it shows in the ring. So holding the tag titles with him is one of my greatest accomplishments because, who better than to hold the tag team championship with than with one of my good friends.
And you are also wrestling in front of 500, 600, 700 people at these AEW shows. And, that's obviously, that obviously adds to it.
Oh yeah. It's crazy to think not even 2 years ago or so they were, they were pulling in good crowds, but not 600, 700, like they have been like within the last, 9 months or whatever. Like AAW has really kicked it up a notch and, they being able to, wrestle in front of that many people and get that much more exposure from AAW. And that's just icing on the cake.
So I want to ask about this match because I don't know how many people are actually going to see this, but you were recently part of an 8-man tag and you got to wrestle the legendary Demolition of Axe and Smash.
Yeah.
So how great was that for you personally? And did Demolition's music play and did you quietly mark out as you were in the ring listening to it?
I wasn't a fan of Demolition, but I was also really way too young, to remember a whole lot. I didn't get into Demolition until, when I was in high school and in the early 2000s. And then when, I started doing more tags is when, I started watching like older tag stuff from WWF, and Demolition happened to be one of those teams. So being in the ring with them and being able to, go against them and, pick their brain on just anything that they had, back from when they were huge, was awesome. Like the whole experience was awesome. Their music did play. In fact, Pierre Abernathy and Evangelistico, who are known as the Commission out there, were on their team and they painted their faces as well. They all came out together and I'm in the middle of the ring and, I'm sitting there, I'm trying not to smile, but, I think the camera caught me a few times. Like I'm trying not to smile and I'm trying to be a bad guy and it's not working out too well for me, but the whole experience was amazing. Like I couldn't, great guys in the ring and just overall, like it's not every day that you get to be in a ring with like legends like that and have a super cool experience like that.
Now, this year, in addition to wrestling Axe and Smash, you've gone basically the complete opposite, as you've been in the ring with AR Fox a number of times this year. And, AR Fox, I think people think of him in a very specific way as this high flyer who's pretty reckless and, does all kinds of dives and moves. And as somebody who has now wrestled AR Fox multiple times, what do you think of him? And, how do you feel about some of the matches that you've had, both tag and singles?
You know, it's funny, like you said, people have this very specific opinion about him. Obviously, he is a high flyer. I can't say that he's reckless in the fact that he goes out there and hurts other people. He definitely looks like he's going to kill himself at any second, though. Being able to wrestle him and test myself against somebody like him who has been on, he's on Lucha Underground now, he's been on Evolve, he's been all over the world, really. being able to test myself against him, like, I can't complain. Like, he's awesome. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, he's, but if you watch any of his matches and if you're a fan of what he does, like, you, people know, like, he's really amazing when he's not trying to kill himself. But my matches with him so far, I think, I want to say the second match that I had with him was probably my favorite. The one, at Berwyn when, he was defending the title against me. It was the return match. He was defending the title against me. I think that one was my favorite. And then the tag match is very close because, being in there with him and Moose, and then, you know, you have the one guy who going around being a high flyer and AR Fox, and then you have the other guy that's just chucking us, and it's basically a handicap match at that point against me, Fitchett and myself. So definitely my second match, I feel, is the better of the three, but the tag match was so much fun.
Absolutely, and, you know, over the last couple of years, somebody else who you've wrestled a number of different times, and, you know, obviously the dynamic has been different between AAW and AIW, but Lewis Linden, who you've feuded with over both the Intense title and the Heritage title, somebody else who I think is pretty regarded as one of the more underrated guys on the independent scene. Thoughts on wrestling him, and, you know, what does he bring to the table, and why aren't more promotions booking this guy?
You know, I'm going to say right now, he is super underrated, super underutilized, and super underbooked. I would wrestle that guy every day of the week if I could. He's one of my good friends, and I'm not just saying that because he is one of my good friends, but he is just, I mean, you know, you've seen him wrestle for how many years now. The dude is great. He's amazing in the ring. The funny thing is, him and I, we've had many matches between AAW and AIW. And the funny thing is I've won both my titles off of him from each company. I beat him for the Intense title, and then I beat him for the Heritage title. So I thought that was kind of funny. But, he brings something different to table. Like, he has like that cruiserweight style, but he mixes it in with like old, like Kung Fu movies, like just stuff that's like, you see stuff on the Kung Fu movie and it's like, okay, yeah, that's not real. Nobody can actually do that in real life. And then he goes out and does it. Like, the dude's insane. Like, I wish he was booked more often and in bigger places. Like, he deserves it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I do want to talk about a company that maybe does not get as much promotion as it should. And some of this has to do with access to footage. And, you know, there are various reasons. But you've had a chance to wrestle a number of well-known independent wrestlers in St. Louis, Anarchy. And, you know, before we sort of get into the specifics and, you know, some of the guys that you faced, how do you feel St. Louis Anarchy has been able to grow over these last couple of years?
Before St. Louis Anarchy was St. Louis Anarchy, they were actually Lethal Wrestling Alliance, from the same area, who actually, they had, kind of a stigma against them for some of the stuff that they did, as far as, like, they did overhead commentary, and they had, like, weird and wacky storylines, and, it wasn't very Chikara friendly. But they would bring guys in, and the houses were okay, and it got to a point that was one part of the stigma, was just they did things differently. The second stigma was actually when we wrestled at Chikara and apparently had the worst match ever in the ECW arena.
Yeah, I wasn't even gonna bring it up.
No, it's okay.
You're probably tired of talking about it.
Oh, no, it's funny, because I've come to terms with it. Like, it's really not that bad. It's really not as bad as people made it out to be. It just shouldn't have been on that weekend.
I mean, when you're on the same card as Johnny Saint and Hella Wicked and Brian Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli and Kota Ibushi, I mean, that's a tough one. That's a really difficult time.
Right, and I think, I don't remember if it was before or after us, but that four-way with Generico, Ibushi, and I think Fyrant, and drawing a blank
Nick
on the
Jackson
first one.
And Jigsaw. People forget that, but it was Nick Jackson and Jigsaw.
Yeah, how crazy was that match? Like, I can't remember, for the life of me, I can't remember, but I want to say that we had to follow that.
I know Kevin Ford is listening to this, and he probably remembers the exact match order, but he's
right.
Not here.
I want to say that we had to follow that, but that's in itself not an easy task. But we shouldn't have been on that weekend. We should have been like on a tag World Grand Prix or something else, like on a smaller scale. Just I thank Mike Quackenbush and Chikara up and down every day that he gave us that opportunity. It just didn't work out in our favor at that moment, at least. We actually got some bookings off of it because people were like, well, we want to see how bad these guys are, actually, and we weren't that bad.
I was going to ask as a follow-up, after you get done telling this, is you got sort of a redemption moment, you know, 5 years later at King of Trios in 2014. So I wanted to go ask how that felt, but, you know, finish what you were going to say.
Okay. That happened. So that was, like, the second stigma against us. So, like, all of this stuff happened, and like the houses started to go down. So they were like, you know, maybe we'll take a couple months off and rebrand ourselves. We were pretty heavy in Texas, in Austin, for ACW, Anarchy Championship Wrestling. So they decided to do St. Louis Anarchy and become kind of like a sister promotion to ACW. And they did like talent swaps and stuff like that. I think from 2011 until now, it's grown tremendously as far as the houses, people that, like, I've noticed that we get more regulars now instead of every month. It's like, oh, okay, well, there's a bunch of new people that I've never seen before. Like, we still get that, but we have a set amount of regulars that come every time they have a show, which I think is awesome. And they've been able to bring in countless number of names. And like, I think somebody was telling me earlier, I saw earlier, there was like six or seven, people that are in the Cruiserweight Classic that have come through, Anarchy on top of some of the people that are already on TV. I think St. Louis Anarchy in the St. Louis area is probably the premier, promotion in the St. Louis area. And it gets slept on a lot only because I think within the last 9 months, maybe it's been the last year or so, they've been putting their stuff up on SmartMark, and they're still trying to get a back catalog out, which slowly but surely is happening. But I think a lot of people have slept on Anarchy when it should be one of like the bigger feds in the Midwest.
And if you're not on SmartMark and you're not on High Spots, it's almost like you may as well not exist. I mean, of course, Evolve and Ring of Honor are exceptions, but
exactly.
You know, unless you're on one of those two, I mean, those are the places to buy independent wrestling. And, you know, more and more, I think people are resistant to try new things when there's so much access to footage.
Right.
So I think for any promotion out there, you've got to get yourself on High Spots or SmartMark Video.
Yeah, exactly. I can't agree more.
So in St. Louis Anarchy, I mean, you've had a chance to wrestle the Zema Ions, the Michael Elgins, the Jonathan Greshams, and you know, what has that done for you to be able to wrestle those level of competitors?
So it's definitely given me way more confidence in the ring, being able to go against these guys and test myself. And then on top of that, I've learned I wish I was able to like wrestle these guys like earlier when I like maybe went like in the first couple years that I was wrestling it. I feel like maybe I would have learned quicker and maybe have been somewhere like, you know, maybe higher up in the wrestling world than I am now, but like maybe on a quicker, maybe quicker, but just wrestling these guys that are so world traveled is an awesome learning experience. I can't even tell you, like, my I remember when I was doing my training at Chikara, and I was like, man, I've learned so much here. Like, there's no way that I'm going to learn anything else. Like, I mean, it's a learning experience wrestling every day, but like, there's nothing, I don't know if I'm going to learn this much ever again. And it's like, every time I get in the ring with one of these guys, like, you know, your Elgins, your Greshams, your, I've been in the ring with Hiro a couple times, like being able to learn from these guys, is just amazing. And being able to, have these guys like watch your matches when they show up at other shows and like give you advice, it's just surreal to me. It's a really awesome feeling. Like it's on the job training every time that I'm there, and it's really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I know that you have had a chance to wrestle Hiro on a couple of occasions, and you know, I mean, if we were doing an awards show at the end of the year, when it comes to Wrestler of the Year, I mean, it's arguable that Chris Hiro would certainly be up there as far as one of the best going right now, even though he's not under contract really to anyone. So it's a testament to how good he's been at literally everywhere, every promotion he wrestles in. He pretty much has the match of the night. And I think it's pretty amazing to think that he's doing this, given that he's been wrestling since, what, 1998, 99?
Yeah, man, he's so good. Like, ridiculously good. I have, like, I'm not even lying, every AAW show I think I have that conversation, like, why isn't he like under contract with somebody? He's ridiculously good. Like, not that he hasn't been in recent years, you know, or before he got signed, like, he's always been really awesome, but like, he's absolutely, ever since he's been back on the indie scene, he's been absolutely killing it, and it's awesome to see.
So I want to ask about the redemption, because you and the rest of your submission squad mates, you got to redeem yourselves and in a match that was pretty heavily praised, if I recall correctly, when you wrestled the Gentleman's Club on night 3 of the 2004 King of Trios. Thankfully, it wasn't Philadelphia. It was Easton, Pennsylvania, which maybe is a more forgiving place. But what was that experience like? And did you feel like you were redeemed in some ways?
I think going into that match, like, we knew we were going to get that match, but there was a lot of lead up to it, obviously, with like all the videos and vignettes that we did, and then showing up to shows and being, you know, stuck on the side of the road and stuff like that. But we knew we were going to get the match, and the whole time we're doing these vignettes, we're just thinking to ourselves, the consensus of the car was, we're going to show these guys that they gave us a bad rap. And we went in there with the mindset that, yeah, we're definitely going to redeem ourselves. And that, like you said, if I remember correct, I think I've seen it somewhere. Maybe it was like a fan award, but we got like some fan award for match of the year or match of the weekend that weekend. And then, like, some other people were like, oh, that was my, you know, they came up to us, like, that was my favorite match all weekend. Like, you guys were awesome. So, like, being able to do that and having so much, there was a lot, obviously way more praise for that match than there was the previous match. So being able to go from one end of the spectrum to the other, our job was complete at that point. Like, it was a good ending to a very tumultuous relationship with Chikara.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a big downer, but, you know, being able to get in there and redeem yourselves, I think that's really important, and I can see how that would be significant, especially, you know, I think for you and for Gary J. I mean, Gary J is someone who is sort of also in that underrated label, and I know you can't be unbiased here, but, you know, I think Gary J, in a certain segment of fans who have seen him in the last couple of years, I think they know how good he is, but, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, even indie fans who really don't know how good Gary J is.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, he's been getting out to Florida for FIP, and then there's this new company within the last year, this AWE, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. They've been popping up with some really good shows and really good talent. He's kind of a mainstay there, and he's trying to travel and get as many shows under his belt as he can. And he's starting to, you know, get his people are starting to realize like how good Gary really is, and it's cool to see, because You know, obviously him and I traveled together for years, and we went through a lot of shit together. And it's good to see that, like, people are finally like, you know, hey, I slept on this guy for so long. Like, he's awesome. We should, you know, we should either book him or, like, hey, this place should book him. And I think what really helped was when he was on that Beyond the Raw alternative that they did.
Yes, his match got a lot of very positive feedback. The video quality wasn't great, but his performance definitely stood out.
Oh, yeah, like, the video quality was atrocious, and that you know, like I said, that was, you know, had to do with, that was before Smart Mark was, you know, bringing their cameras and filming the shows for us. So, that, yeah, the film was atrocious, but, like, him being able to get on there and get, you know, exposed to a bigger audience, I think that helped a lot for him, and that's really awesome to see.
So in the year 2016, it's incredible to think of just some of the places that people are working and some of the interactions that we've seen. And this is true for nearly every wrestling company. I mean, you can look on every weekend and it seems like there's a dream match of some sort or something incredible happening. I mean, AJ Styles and John Cena, for God's sakes, it's happening
right
on Sunday. But for you as a wrestler, with all this fluidity going across all of these various promotions, you know, on the week to week, what are sort of your goals at this point, and how do you feel about sort of your status in independent wrestling?
You know, for a while there, like, when I was AIW Intense Champion, people were, like, labeling me as, like, being underrated, and a lot of people were calling for me to get, you know, booked and, you know, some other places, like, you know, like Ring of Honor or Evolve or something like that, which is a goal of mine. I am working towards trying to make that happen. It's just, you know, taking a little bit more time than I would like. 2016 has been really, really good for me as far as, like, you know, AAW and, you know, some other place in the Midwest. And I'm traveling almost every weekend, and, you know, I get to do it for free. I get paid to travel and see the country, and I couldn't ask for more at this point. But some of my goals, I would definitely like to be, you know, first and foremost, I want to stay healthy. I had a bout there. I actually got injured right before I won the Intense title, and that whole year and a half or whatever that I was Intense champion, I had a really bad shoulder injury that I couldn't rehab and get fixed. And now everything's good. Like, I'm good to go. I rehabbed and I'm good to go as far as, like, being healthy. So, I want to stay healthy, and, as long as I can stay healthy, I think that I'll be in wrestling for, I got some mileage under my belt. And I got some mileage left, so stay healthy. And I want to get, you know, people say they want to be contracted, and, like, I want to be contracted or I want to be on TV somewhere, but it's not necessarily, like, a make or break for me. What I really want to do is I want to go overseas and maybe get a tour or two, whether that's, you know, in Europe or Japan or whatever, and then maybe, you know, come back and get something bigger than what I'm doing, and kind of want to keep doing what I'm doing, like the AAW and, you know, a couple of the Midwest places like Anarchy and Metro, and travel down to Texas when I can. And, I haven't actually, crossed this bridge yet, but, I want to try to come back to, AIW. I think I'm ready to do that at this point after taking some time off and reassessing my situation. So, that's kind of my goals right now.
I mean, you can make a pretty strong argument that as AIW and AAW and even Beyond, which I know you were part of in the early days, and go back there sporadically. I mean, these three companies, when we look at where they were in 2009 and look at where they are in 2016, I mean, these are arguably three of the most successful independent promotions going right now. And you've certainly had a hand in helping all three of those companies grow at this point. Obviously, there's a lot of factors, but that also has to make you feel good that other companies are also growing in exposure as well.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Like, as far as, like, Beyond goes, that was, I've known Drew for, man, 12, 13 years now. And I remember when Beyond was just a pipe dream for him, and how he would always tell us that that's what he wanted to do, this, that, and the other. And, you know, we were like, yeah, we're on board, let's do it. And, you know, it took a few years, but being able to be a part of Beyond and, you know, help it get off the ground, and then, you know, it got exposure out in Rhode Island, and he was using people that are actually, you know, they're doing big things, like JT Dunn and Chris Dickinson and Team Pazuzu. Like, they're doing some big things out there, and you know, they've been booked at, like, JT Dunn's been out in PWG, and Dickinson's been in Evolve and Ring of Honor over the, you know, last couple years. And being able to have a hand
in general has grown significantly, and there's obviously other factors as well, but
right.
You know, the New England scene is so much more prevalent now than it was even in 2012, 2013.
Right, no doubt. There's a lot of quality wrestlers out that way. I think they just need, besides Beyond, like, Beyond's got, like, a really good grip on exposure, but besides that, like, they just need to get out and get more exposure. Like, those guys are great. I've wrestled, you know, quite a few of them. But being able to have a hand in Beyond in its early days, and then being able to come back to Beyond over the last year or two was an awesome feeling. I still keep in contact with Drew, and we're working on trying to get me back there at some point. So that's probably in the pipeline as well. But and then AIW growing, and then AAW growing, like, both of those have grown significantly in the last. Man, it's been at least, like, a year, right? Like, I'm trying to think.
It's definitely AEW. I mean, it's sort of a slow going at first, but, you know, you can make a pretty solid argument that they've been going strong for the last 2 or 3 years. But, you know, obviously the last 6 months or so, ever since the Logan Square Auditorium, they basically have been selling out every single show. So it's one of those situations, and, you know, Beyond has done very, very well everywhere, and, you know, AIW is starting to branch out with some of their road shows.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been slow growth for a while. I mean, if you look where, like I said, all three of these companies were in 2009, and you look at them in 2016, it's unbelievable.
It's night and day.
How many? I mean, they're like different. All three are different companies at this point.
Right.
So, in a positive way.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Like you were saying, that Logan Square, the Logan Square Auditorium show, that was definitely the turning point. They had that show and it sold out, and then ever since then they've been hitting. I think they've been hitting record attendance ever since, like every month. Like, it's been ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, Pentagon, obviously the Lucha Underground guys have a lot to do with it, and Zack Sabre Jr., but, you know, I think that exposure, running the city proper, I think that all has a lot to do with it. And AEW also available on High Spots now, so it's even more exposure. So even more people are going to see you wrestle very soon.
Yeah, that's good for me. That's good for me. I can't hope for anything better than that. More exposure is always good.
Absolutely. So obviously wrestling is important to you, but I would be remiss if we did not discuss your Cleveland Cavaliers. you are from Cleveland, correct? That is your hometown.
Yes, I was born in Cleveland, and I lived there with my mother and my dad for like a year. So I don't remember too much about it. But I lived there, and then we moved a little further down south to, like, the Canton, Maslin area. So I was born and raised in Ohio, but Cleveland has always been my team, as far as, like, baseball and basketball goes. I had a little bit of a identity crisis when I was younger, where I liked the Charlotte Hornets more so than the Cavs. But I mean, how could you hate the mid '90s Charlotte Hornets at that point?
As a Chicago Bulls fan, it's easy for me to hate every team that is in the Chicago
Bulls. It's been fun. Like, there's a lot of ups and downs in Cleveland, as you can go online and read all of the heartbreaks that Cleveland has had, but, you know, I stand by my teams, man. Like, Cleveland Indians, Cleveland, Cleveland Cavaliers, and I guess to an extent the Cleveland Browns. I'm not much into football, but I'll pay attention if the Browns ever do good. But those are my teams, man.
So you're probably never going to pay attention to football is what you're telling
me. Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
I mean, it's funny to think that with you obviously being so involved in the Midwest scene and St. Louis Anarchy, you could have gone with the Cardinals, but you stuck with the Indians despite everything.
Yeah, you know, and I do enjoy the Cardinals. Like, ACH gives me shit for it because he's like, you can't have two teams that you like. But I always say, like, Indians are my American League team and the Cardinals are my National League team. So, obviously, I enjoy the Cardinals and I celebrated when they won the World Series a couple times over the last 10 years. And I will say if they ever met in the World Series, like the Cardinals and the Indians, obviously, I'm going for the Indians at that point. So.
So, obviously, the Cavaliers are in the NBA Finals, and yep. How excited, nervous are you? You know, obviously, this is the second straight year, and were you even worried at any point during the Eastern Conference playoffs? Because I certainly would not see a Cleveland Cavaliers fan being nervous when they're facing the hapless Toronto Raptors and some of the teams in the semifinals and first round.
You know, for a minute there, not even a minute. Like before the final or the playoffs even started, I was like, "Man, I remember the Heat blowing us out at one point earlier in the season, and that was like the last time that they faced each other, and they just couldn't keep up with them." And I think maybe that was right when Kyrie came back, and he was still trying to get the feeling out process with his knee. And a couple other people, you know, like Shumpert was hurt. And that was before J.R. Smith went on like his ridiculous 3-point tear. For a minute there, I thought, if we meet Miami in the playoffs, like there's a possibility that they could either take the series or at least take us 7 games. And then they took the Raptors 7 games and couldn't clinch it. So, I was kind of worried for nothing at that point. Other than that, there was nothing, in my honest opinion, and I'm not like trying to put down anybody's teams, but there was nobody in the Eastern Conference that could touch the Cavs at the point of the playoffs when the playoffs started.
I mean, the Cavs have the best player, arguably the best player in the league still, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's really tough. I mean, the Eastern Conference is so terrible. It's so bad. Like, the playoffs have basically been unwatchable this year, with the exception of a few games in the West. A couple of the Toronto-Cleveland games were competitive, but otherwise, this playoffs has just been historically bad.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, like, I know the Hawks made it into playoffs the last 2 years, but, like, they kind of went on the downward spiral this past playoffs, like, I'm trying to remember who maybe it was because they lost Carroll. But I felt like they gave, even though they got swept, I felt like they gave the Cavs a better, they made them sweat a little more in last year's playoffs than they did this year.
For sure. And we will have to see what happens in the rest of the finals. But I want to ask about a documentary that recently aired on ESPN because mm-hmm. you're a Cleveland sports guy. Where they talk about all the tragedies of Cleveland. And, you know, look, I'm a Chicagoan, so I was kind of laughing through the whole thing because I'm a Bulls fan, I'm a White Sox fan, so anytime Cleveland can be tortured, it amuses me greatly. But as a Cleveland fan, how did that make you feel in reliving some of the heartbreak and, you know, just seeing all of this basically put together in 90 minutes or so?
So I started watching it and, like, man, I think, so I was born in 85 and I don't remember much of the Browns, heartbreak stuff, but I vividly remember the Cavs heartbreak in the early 90s and then the Indians heartbreak in the mid 90s and then everything past that. So I've had to deal with quite a bit of the heartbreak, because it seems like from 88 on, there's been quite a bit of heartbreak in Cleveland. So I started watching a little bit of it, and then I was like, you know what? I'm reminded of this stuff daily. I don't need to watch it in a documentary. So I haven't finished it yet, but I keep hearing how good it is.
I mean, I can imagine. I can imagine it being pretty rough.
Yeah. It's, and I can't even imagine, like, somebody who's older than me, who's a diehard, you know, like, Cleveland fan, like, how rough it is for them. Because if I'm having a rough time and somebody's, like, in their 60s or 70s, like, a diehard fan, I can only imagine, like, what they're going through. and if they watch that, like, man.
It's got to be pretty rough.
Yeah.
You know, I will never forget. I went to a Cleveland Browns season opener a few years ago. They were playing the Miami Dolphins. My friend is a Miami Dolphins fan because of Dan Marino. So I went with him. Mm-hmm. And at the game, there was a family of four sitting in front of us. And there was one point when the father pointed out that something bad had happened. And there was this little 8-year-old kid. And the father's like, why does this keep happening to us? And the little 8-year-old kid said, because it's Cleveland. And since that day, my friend and I, every time something happens to the Cavaliers or the Indians, we will always text each other because Cleveland. So yeah. That is my Cleveland story.
Yeah, we're born. There's a couple of things, like, when you're in Cleveland, like, you're born to know. You're born to know. You hate the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're born to hate them. You hate any Chicago team. You're born to know that all of the heartbreak is like a history lesson as soon as you're out of the womb, it seems. Like, here's all the heartbreak you need to know about, because there's a good chance that during your lifetime there's going to be plenty of other heartbreak that goes on in Cleveland. So the fact that the 8-year-old was like, because it's Cleveland, it's funny, but it's like, it doesn't surprise me because we know.
No matter what.
Right.
Well, you've at least got the UFC heavyweight champion. You got that going for you.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And the fact that he was like, hey, I brought a championship back to Cleveland, that was really cool.
But I feel like he's really testing fate by defending it in Cleveland. That just seems, that seems like another recipe for heartache.
Yeah. I want to root for him, obviously, but he's definitely testing fate at this point.
Yes, and your minor league hockey team also won a championship, so you've at least got a little bit of hope.
Yeah, I wish I saw that, and I wish I really paid attention to hockey. I kind of started doing it when, like, the Blues were going deeper and deeper into the playoffs this year. I kind of started paying attention, but, like, I've never been a hockey guy, unfortunately, so it hasn't really kept my attention. But I, you know, that's really awesome that they were able to. Don't they have a soccer team or something too that won something recently?
I don't know. I know their arena football team had one really good year, and they got blown out in the championship game. I remember that. I was there for that. And they lost by like 50 points or something like that, and it was sold out. It was crazy. And of course,
because Cleveland.
Because Cleveland, yes. and on that happy note, Davey Vega, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else? Why don't you plug your partner's stuff as well?
Okay. You can reach me at my email, which is DaveyVega85@gmail.com. Facebook, keywords Davey Vega. My Twitter is DaveyVega85, or at DaveyVega85. My Instagram is also DaveyVega85. And all of those I can be reached on at any point in time. My partners, Matt Stitchett, he can be reached on Twitter and Facebook. Facebook is Matt Stitchett. Don't be surprised if he doesn't add you, because he doesn't add a lot of people, but you can reach him there. And then at his Twitter is @TheDirtyRook.
And he's also got something really cool with the shirts, because he does not have the required followers for Pro Wrestling Tees, but he is still able to sell his wares at, I believe it's whatamaneuver.net, correct?
Yes, whatamaneuver.net. He got our Besties in the World shirt, and then the I think it's Rook is Dirty, and the WWE Raw logo.
Very cool. Well, Davey, I want to thank you very much for doing this. I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday, as well as what a stacked show this Friday night at 115 Bourbon Street. Davey, thank you very much once again. Have a good night, and we'll see if the Cavaliers can pull off a victory.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and we'll see. You'll see my mood will be on Friday, depending on the basketball game. So
absolutely, that will have a definite effect. All right, have a good night, sir.
You too. Thank you.